Hi, my name is Cressida Stevenson, Director of Eden Chase Associates, a specialist D&I in tech search and recruitment organisation. Welcome to the fourth episode of my podcast, D&I Recruitment 101, the how-to series. In this episode, I catch up with the amazing Susan Grayson, who is Director of Resourcing, Talent, D&I and L&D at Spirit Energy. She shares their D&I journey and has some great insights to help you with yours. I hope you enjoy. So I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Susan Grayson, who is the Director of Resourcing for Talent, D&I and Learning and Development at Spirit Energy. So Susan, welcome, welcome. It's so lovely to see you today. Thank you for coming and joining my podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. It's nice to be here. I'm looking forward to having a chat with you.
Do you want to start off and give us a kind of a story about how you've got to where you are today?
Yeah, no problem. And I have taken a kind of slightly different path into ending up in a diversity and inclusion role in an HR team in our industry, because I actually started out on the technical side in our industry. Many years I was looking after hydrocarbon sales and accounting, fiscal measurement and our tanker operations. So very technical, but I've always, from the very early days in our industry when we actually started talk about D&I, which was not that long ago in the energy industry, there was a focus on gender. I got involved in the first women's network, actually, in the company that I was working for at the time. And I was really quite reticent to get involved. But I questioned myself about that and actually thought, no, I should get involved, just reflecting on the experience I had had in the industry as a woman. I thought, you know, I can probably help other women coming through our industry. And if I can make a difference, that's positive. So I joined that network, eventually led that network, and stayed involved in diversity and inclusion activities more as a kind of side to my day job. But it took up a lot of my personal time, but I was committed to making a difference. And I could see that the things that we were doing, the conversations that were starting to take place within the workplace were, you know, actually conversations that hadn't been had before around gender. So to cut a long story short, the company I currently work for, we're advertising for a D&I role in HR. And at that time, I had some successors ready in my team to take my role. So I thought, you know, I don't tick all the boxes for that role, but I'm going to apply. So I did, and here I am. So I made quite a late life career change into HR, and I'm now responsible for D&I, L&D, and the resourcing process, as well as our talent process. And I think having been a people manager most of my career, that has been a good foundation for me to build on it in an HR role, because I've always felt strongly that your people and your team, you know, make such a big difference.
What were your experiences then within the oil and gas industry as a woman?
Oh gosh, yes, I was very used to being the only woman in the room. It was unusual in my early days in my career to see any women at, you know, certain meetings and event, and you just took it as normal. It wasn't until I actually went to a meeting that was specifically, I think it was the Women's Oil Council when it was started up. I went to that meeting and it was mostly women. I felt very uncomfortable because I had been so used to being the only woman in a room of men. So there was that. And then going offshore in the very early days, there was very few women, if any, and our industry still struggles to attract female talent to offshore roles. But, you know, if you went offshore, you were expected that you were the steward or you were in the catering side. You know, people didn't expect you to have a technical role offshore. So, yeah, it was, looking back, it was a very male dominated industry. It's really improved a lot recently, which is the impact of companies picking up D&I initiative.
Let's talk about what were the first three things that you did to kind of start to move that dial forward in your new role as Director of Resourcing D&I?
Yeah, and it feels daunting because if you start thinking about bringing D&I into everything in terms of the employee experience, it's just too much. So you have to think about things in a logical order. So I started with our employee networks. We only had women's network or a gender balance network at the time. And I really knew that we needed to expand that to all, you know, aspects of protected characteristics. So we expanded the number of networks. We've now got six in Spirit. But that was something I wanted to do really early on, because D&I is not just about gender. And I know it was a priority in our industry, but equally, other things in our industry, you know, like disability and LGBTQ plus, our priorities in terms of representation being low. So we started out new networks, attracted network leads from these different areas, set those up. So that was kind of the first step to get our people behind specific networks for D&I. And then I started to look at our recruitment process, because that is the interface with the outside world. So that's how we attract candidates and talent into our business. So completely analysed every step in our recruitment process with a D&I lens to make sure that, you know, we were weeding out the things that we were doing, probably inadvertently or just from lack of knowledge, that were excluding certain, you know, to bring into our organisation. So a really focused review of the recruitment process. And then for me, it was about bringing D&I into the kind of whole employee life cycle. So looking at next steps, so the onboarding process, induction, looking at that from a D&I lens, and then into, you know, development, career development, learning and development. So it's kind of nice that all of these different things are under my remit, because I'm able to influence and make changes. I know you said three things, but probably the fourth thing for me was really making sure that we had a recipe that would work. So, and by that, I mean engaged senior leadership, a supportive HR team helping with policy and process, and these employee-led networks having, but the networks actually having a voice with our leadership team as well. To represent that, you know, the community that, you know, they're coming from. So that piece was bringing all of that together.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because through those four steps, you're bringing different communities within your organisation together in a structured way, that actually you're opening up channels of communication that previously weren't there, effectively.
Absolutely, yeah. And having D&I on the agenda for our senior leadership team is really important. And that, you know, when people see senior leaders actually being authentic around inclusion, and that it means it's important to them, then people react to that and respond to it. So all of our network groups have a senior executive as an ambassador for that group, and they have meetings with them. So the participants in the group gain from having access to senior leaders, and the senior leader gains by having those conversations that they might not otherwise have in the organisation.
And I want to go back to the second point you made about recruitment process and analysing your, doing a focused review on your recruitment process. Mm. Looking at what were the key take homes that you found from doing that review about your recruitment process?
That there are so many branches to a recruitment process. It's not as simple as just a job advert, an interview, you know, looking at some CV. So we really broke it down into each step. And the first step is really that job advert, because that's the piece that engages, you know, the talent to want to apply. So it was that piece that we worked on first. So we looked at the wording in our job adverts and found that they weren't particularly gender balanced. Some were quite erring on the side of being male, about, you know, male dominant. So the language we changed, we run all our job adverts through a gender neutrality checker. And then our resourcing manager actually started looking at checkers for the language. So the language can be either very complex or very simple. So we've tried to make, you know, hit the middle spot with our job adverts so that they appeal to a broader community of readers. So there was that aspect. So every single piece that you look at, there's more and more to do. So we just kind of took it a step at a time. So we moved through the job advert, the job description. We have a lot of technical roles. So our job descriptions could, you know, could be quite dull, to be honest. So we've adjusted that by having a nice technical piece to still appeal to the, you know, technical community, but also have a kind of more people-oriented piece in our job advert and job description as well. So we've balanced them. So that was the main thing, just attracting a broader range of talent. But we've also looked at how we advertise, you know, where we advertise, targeting specific D&I job boards with roles. We use Work 180, which is a job board that is, you know, you need to be an endorsed employer for gender neutral policies. We just try every avenue to reach out to different communities and just don't go for the standard approach.
What about when you then get applications through from the marketplace? How do you then review your applicants and look at the potential bias there of your employees or hiring
Yeah,
managers.
absolutely. So we realized early on that that was something that we could improve. And whilst I think it's impossible to absolutely get rid of all bias, even using AI, there's bias in the background of, you know, how that AI algorithm works. So we've tried to minimize. And so what we've done with the CVs is that our recruiters are trained in unconscious bias, and in inclusive recruitment skills. As well as our hiring managers, we've tried to train as many of those as possible, and we've put together guidance for our hiring managers, which does include, you know, looking out for some potential bias, and we have very structured interviews. But the first person that looks at CVs is definitely the recruiter. So we've made sure that they're trained and working to reduce bias and certainly aware of bias that they might have. We don't use AI to screen CVs. For me, I'm not sure whether AI is the right way to go. I know it's something that a lot of companies use, but I worry that behind that AI, there is bias that's built into the algorithms in how it's constructed. So I'm yet to be convinced on the use of AI. I know Amazon tried it and actually shelved the program because they found that they were hiring, that it wasn't working by bringing more bias in by using the AI. So I think that's not something we've used yet. And for me, I think we'll probably leave that for a while.
It's interesting, isn't it? And it's always that, it's that argument about, at what point does AI technology replace the human aspect? And I guess if you've got internal recruiters that have been trained and so know what they're doing, then it's difficult, isn't it? But I would certainly, particularly for challenging technical roles, especially within the oil and gas industry, I would imagine that there's maybe things or subtleties that are said in a CV that your talent team would pick up on that would probably not necessarily be picked on upon by AI because of their background and the knowledge of the industry, etc.
Absolutely. And, you know, we use a long list and then we go to a short list, but we also introduce psychometric testing as well to make sure that we're gleaning the same information about each candidate. And likewise, when we get to the interview stage, we use a very structured interview approach with set questions and work with our hiring managers to score the questions and then, you know, reach a consensus. So there, you know, there's more than one person involved. And we always, I think this past year, we've had 100% of our interview panels have been diverse in terms of gender. So we, you know, that is a target for us. We can control that in spirit. We can make sure that we have diverse interview panels so that it's not just one gender opinion on a candidate. We also try and have diverse short lists and long lists, but we don't, competency is always at the forefront. So we will always bring competent candidates only. And that is very difficult in some of our engineering and technical roles. So we mix it up and we have people from other teams come and interview because as long as there's the person there on the technical aspects of the job, the other person or individuals doesn't need to be from that specific team. And we also try to avoid hiring for culture fit because that just ends up with a group of like-minded same people. So we like to expand the mind of the hiring manager and move away from thinking about let's hire someone who absolutely fits into everything I need in my team. Sometimes it's great to hire someone who's not that fit because you'll get the alternative viewpoint.
Forget about cultural fit, it's cultural add.
Yeah.
It's adding that extra bit of sauce, isn't it? It's adding that extra bit of magic ingredients that makes you then debate and discuss whether this direction is the right direction or should we be looking at it a different way. And that's when you get diversity of thought and that's when you get innovation, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've recently, we're aware of the vast talent out there under the neurodiverse population, and we've added an accessibility toolbar to our website, which allows neurodiverse individuals to actually view the website in hundreds of different ways. There's so many different ways that you can actually view our website because that's a pool of talent that we want to tap into because some of our, you know, with the ability to work remotely for some roles, will appeal to maybe people who are neurodiverse. So we have to get them able to see our job adverts. So we've added that accessibility feature to our website to further expand that group because you're quite right, bringing in really diverse talent just makes such a difference in terms of innovation and diversity of thought.
Some of my clients are looking at implementing D&I in an organisation, And they're looking at ways to really make D&I part of, not just part of their people, but part of their business. It's what they do day in, day out. So they're looking at ways from an HR perspective to tie in D&I and evolution of that D&I environment into man management roles. So they're making it part of the performance. Is that something that you've had experience of, or what are your thoughts on that? Making your own line managers accountable for creating more diverse, inclusive teams and being able to have that broader conversation around looking at other underrepresented groups and how we can bring them all together.
Absolutely. I mean, diversity and inclusion is part of the conversation that our recruiter will have with the hiring manager. And we do track our candidate shortlists, how diverse they are. And in fact, we actually need approval from our CEO to proceed with a non-diverse candidate shortlist. So the hiring manager has to justify why they're going ahead with a non-diverse shortlist of candidates, and it's ultimately our CEO who will either approve or not approve, ask us to go out to the market again. So there is a strong sense of understanding that, you know, from hiring managers, we need to make our teams more diverse by looking at a broader group of candidates where we can and where the competency is there. And if not, there's, you know, there is that thought that they will need to seek approval from ultimately the CEO, which I think has a big difference. It gives you that conversation, the ability to have that conversation about inclusion and the benefits of that at the right point in the process.
And I think more importantly as well, it kind of makes it a much more intentional and sustainable practice, rather than it being just a token gesture of, well, yeah, let's, like you said, it's based first and foremost on competency, but you've got to have a diverse shortlist. And if you don't, then you're going to have to get sign off, and you're going to have to explain why and give the data in the background. That makes it intentional and sustainable.
Absolutely. But we've also brought it into other aspects of HR. We've worked really hard in the reward team in HR to make our pay and reward process transparent. Our career ladders, so our job families and career ladders are all transparent on our website, so people can see what they need to achieve to get to the next step within their discipline. That's all, you know, available on our intranet for people to see. And we've also made the promotion process transparent, so people understand when in the year promotions will happen and how that promotion process works. Because research does tell us that for a candidate, maybe say, let's talk about gender. And you mentioned earlier that women may not apply for a role if they don't have all the qualifications. Well, having a transparent promotion process makes it easier for people to understand what they do need and it's visible. So it does give them that ability to have that conversation with their manager rather than it being a vague process that happens kind of in the background and is hidden. We prefer to make everything transparent and available to all.
In terms of your time in your role, what are you most proud of?
I think I'm really proud of the way that we have our senior leadership, our employee networks and HR working as a team on inclusion. Yeah. Often in companies, it's left to the employee network. They get swamped because they feel responsible and it's not their day job. And I think just having those three things working together and seeing our external brand really go from strength to strength around inclusion has made me really proud, because I think it's a team effort and spirit. It's not down to just myself or, you know, just the leadership team. I think everyone in spirit is engaged and in making it an inclusive environment. And it's nice to see that. So I think it's not one thing that makes me proud. I think it's all of it. But just on the external brand, you can have a brand that's associated with inclusion externally, but that's no use if individuals coming into your company don't then experience that inclusion. So we check both, and it's nice to see that that does actually happen. So when people join the business, they are feeling that inclusive environment. So that does make me proud as well.
And what have been the biggest challenges, would you say, in terms of trying to push the D&I agenda forward within Spirit?
It's always a challenge. I think there's a number of things. So I think when you support one particular group in one way with, you know, with some specific supports, you alienate another. So we get queries around, oh, there's positive discrimination happening. And that is okay at the start of the recruitment process. We can advertise in certain communities. That's okay. We can do that. But ultimately, it comes down to competency. But when you have processes like this, groups often think or perceive that you're doing something different and think that they're being, you know, there's positive discrimination taking place. So it's hard to actually work with groups of people who feel alienated as part of the process. So white males, maybe older white males, feel alienated. It's trying to work with those groups to bring them on board and understand how they're feeling, and you can never satisfy everyone. So that's a big challenge for me, is listening to every group and, you know, taking all the comments on board and finding a middle ground somewhere. So
if you were to give nuggets of wisdom from your learned experience and your continuing journey that you're on, what would your golden nuggets be?
I would say, you know, don't try and reinvent the wheel with D&I. There's a lot of external support. There's numerous D&I groups who have the expertise of their particular area, you know, so lean on these groups, have partnerships with groups around perhaps gender, ethnicity, disability, LGBTQ+. Lean on those partnerships, bring them into your organization, get their expertise and advice, because they know what they're talking about and they've made their mistake. They understand the key issues for their own population. So lean into those groups and use their support and advice. Don't try and do it all yourself. And I would say use research, try and stay ahead of the curve by reading the research, have a broad range of websites that you use to read articles, but get lots of different viewpoints, because for every positive, there'll be a negative. So try and stay ahead of what's happening in, you know, in the world, because that has an impact on D&I. Black Lives Matter last year had a huge impact on ethnicity in the workplace and how companies are actually approaching that. And I think it's shone a light on companies in terms of ethnic diversity. So be aware of what's going on in the world and bring that into your organization in the appropriate way. Lastly, for me, which I've learned recently, is to take time and listen to other people's lived experiences, because you come from your own experience, your own background, you've got your own lens on the world, and you can learn so much by listening to others. And I've questioned my own upbringing around racial equality and my views. And I think you don't get that unless you actually hear it from people who have experienced that. So where I'm coming from here is broaden your horizons. Make sure that your LinkedIn feed and your Facebook feed has got a variety of different people and different groups, so that you're getting those different opinions and you're not just seeing like-minded opinions yourself.
All really insightful. I think that's all we've got time for. That was so illuminating. I think you've definitely inspired a lot of people.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed my chat with Susan Grayson, and I hope you did too. If you are a D&I specialist or HRD on your D&I journey and would like to be a guest on my podcast, then please get in touch. Or if you think your organisation could benefit from a free 30-minute D&I recruitment process audit, then please book a discovery call with me at edenchase.com, where you can find all my contact details and links to the rest of my podcast series. Thanks for listening.